Welcome to the Perp Web Podcast, hosted by Joe Bosch.
And good morning, everyone, and welcome to Perf Web 89. I know we've been delayed in getting this program out to you, but it has been a challenging past week for me. Anyway, we've been extremely busy at work, and you need to make this announcement right now. If you are looking, we are hiring, okay? So we need some help out here in the Woodlands, Texas. And it is so incredibly beautiful. You would love to live out here. It's affordable. The work that's done is really good. Great surgeons, really progressive hospitals. It's absolutely beautiful. Please learn something about the Woodlands and see if that's something you might be interested in, because we are hiring new grads or experienced perfusionists, and we do everything but not transplants. So very, very, very rarely is there the middle of the night kind of thing that goes on. Now, we do have our share of ECMOs, but, you know, for those of you who know, who've watched this program for a while, you know that we are building our ECMO specialist division of the company, and that's kind of the direction we're going to go with all of that. I've been really busy at work. We've had some really unusually difficult cases. Plus, we have a person on maternity leave, which is lovely, wonderful. And plus, we have someone taking their boards. And so it's left us a little bit shorter staff than we would like, but we are definitely hiring. We need to hire two or three. Two for sure, three possibly. So please, take a look at the Woodlands. Look at our program, het.us. There it is right there. Thanks, David. I appreciate that. Check out the hospitals, St. Luke's Methodist Memorial, the Woodlands campuses, and it's a great program. Contact me, whatever, if you so desire. Okay, getting on with our program and our opening remarks, you can always reach out to us about the program portion at contact@perfusioneducation.com. So please do that, and you'll notice, here's our call-in number. If you want to call and be live on the air, you're always welcome to use that number, and we can talk person to person, and everyone can hear us. We can hear you, so that'd be fun to be live on the air. We do occasionally get people that call. You see our scroll bar down below there. Please go ahead and use that scroll bar for information about our Facebook, our Twitter, our LinkedIn, our contact, the phone number stays up all of the time, and there you go. And then our app, if you go to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store, you can find our app under MediWeb, Perfusion and Critical Care app. There's actually two apps. One is the larger app that has the a bunch of different categories. Perfusion with some quick calcs for your cases that you're doing, give you flows, give you red cell volume, give you a whole bunch of stuff, a lot of information. An ECMO section, it has a drug calculator, a rate dose calculator, which is also a standalone. It has conversions, it has stuff on oxygen delivery. There's a lot of components to the app. And again, you can find it on the Apple or Google stores under the MediWeb Critical Care Perfusion app. So do that. Our podcasts, whatever your favorite podcast delivery service is, where you like to stream from, Spotify, Podbeam, whatever it is, you can find us and listen to us. You're driving in the car, you want to listen to the program. Some good educational content. A lot of what we do, I think, is very suitable for podcasting. And those that, you know, where you don't have the imaging and stuff, you can always go back and look at that imaging if you wanted to at a later date. All right, let's, so yes, sir. Oh, I have to share my screen again? Okay. So stand by 1 second, everyone, and I'll do that. I'm going to share my screen and get going. Share screen, Joe's iPad. That doesn't come up. Like, I've had this issue before. That monitor doesn't come up. No. Yeah, I've had that happen. This happened before. Like, it really is mirrored. It just doesn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Do we
have to program on the iPad yet? No. Oh, there's Joe's iMac. It just popped up. Okay. And now it's asking, it's like spinning, wanting to connect. And so while we're waiting for that, our acuity definitely went up and we had some real challenging situations occur. You know, we do mostly here in the Houston area, bread and butter cases. They're not as challenging perhaps as you would find in the medical center, but certainly they could not connect. But sometimes we do get some difficult cases. Look, I'm doing it. Screen mirroring Joe's iMac, and it goes around the circles. Mm-hmm. There's something happened.
Oh, there we go.
Good, okay. All right, now let's not disconnect me again. All right, I'm going to pop it up. And let's get started. So really today's, are we good? Magic, are we good? Okay, why don't we go to a quick break? Why don't we fix it? And then that way I don't have to do nothing. Yeah, don't put break. Can I just have the iPad, please, and not deal with this anymore? Okay, everyone, and welcome back. So I'm standing now. No one, apparently they were upset with me for having an opportunity to sit at the desk today. So I apologize. We're usually not this dysfunctional, but it's just the way it is. So SARS-CoV-2 versus influenza-associated ARDS requiring VV ECMO support. Hey, Magic, can you start that clock for me? Extracorporeal membrane oxygenation. This is an article with the title that you see here. And I went ahead and circled or underlined this name here, Elaine Combs. He is such a prolific writer on the subject of ECMO. It comes out of Paris, France. Very, very interesting. He's got a heck of a biography. A lot of his articles I depend on, and I find him to be an excellent, excellent researcher. I'd like to meet him one day, hopefully. So in summary, background, over the course of the COVID-19 pandemic, the care of patients with COVID has changed and the use of ECMO has increased. I think we all feel that. We aimed to examine patient selection, treatments, outcomes, and ECMO center characteristics over the course of the pandemic to date. And this was written in 2022. As far as their methods are concerned, they retrospectively analyzed the ECMO registry and COVID-19 addendums to compare three groups. This is very important. Of ECMO-supported patients with COVID-19 that were age 16 or greater. So no, this is not young, this is not pediatric cases. This is essentially adults age 16 and above. The three categories were early adopting centers, those using ECMO support for COVID-19 throughout 2020, so early in the pandemic, right? They compared patients who started ECMO on or before May 1st of 2020, which is group A1. Now try to keep up with this, okay? And I'll go over it again to make sure we're clear on it. Between May 2nd and December 31st, those folks were categorized into group A2. Late adopting centers, which are centers that were not providing ECMO services already, but started May 1st of 2020, are group B. So you have group A1, which are centers that were already doing ECMO, looking at their patients before May of 2020. Group A2 are those same centers, but their patients after May of 2020. And group B are basically new centers, centers who came online to provide ECMO after May 20. So they didn't have that prior experience. Those are the three groups, A1, A2, and B. In 2020, 4,812 patients with COVID-19 received ECMO across 349 centers within 41 countries. For early adopting centers, that's a group A1 and group A2, cumulative incidence of in-hospital mortality at 90 days after initiation of ECMO was 36.9%, and that's cumulative. In patients who started ECMO on or before May 1st, which is group A1, versus 51% after May 1st, group A2. So you had an increase in mortality in the early adopting centers if they treated the patient with ECMO before May 1st versus after May 1st. That's a very important concept. At late adopting centers, group B, these are centers who did not do ECMO before but started after May of 2020, it was 58.9%, so even worse. So group A had a lower mortality, A1, than group A2. Same hospitals, early adopters, just different disease, COVID, but different variant. And group B had never done ECMO before. They started doing ECMO, and those patients, which would be comparable to A2, did worse at the late adopting centers. Mortality after ECMO for patients with COVID-19 worsened during 2020. These findings inform the role of ECMO in COVID-19 for patients, clinicians, and policymakers. Now, the authors to this article state that there is no funding for this research. Clinical guidelines for the management of COVID, management of patients with COVID-19 have evolved, agreed with that. The earliest studies of ECMO for COVID-19 reported prohibitively high mortality rates in small cohorts. Yet, informed by existing evidence from non-COVID-19 patients with ARDS, like influenza associated, international medical organizations still recommended early in the pandemic that ECMO should be considered if conventional treatment was not successful. So refractory to lung protective ventilation strategies, patients still hypercarbic, still patients still hypoxic, we've got to do something. Subsequent multi-center observational cohort studies included one from the Voluntary International Registry of the ELSO organization reported outcomes for patients with COVID-19 receiving ECMO that were comparable to ECMO-supported patients with non-COVID-19 related acute respiratory distress syndrome. The ELSO registry study reported outcomes for 10,035 patients with COVID-19 who were started on ECMO before May 20th, 2020. The estimated cumulative incidence of in-hospital mortality 90 days after the initiation of ECMO was 37.4%, and this had a 95% confidence interval, and the range was 34.4 to 40.4. As the pandemic progressed, there were substantial changes in the management of COVID-19, how we were treating these patients, whether it was going to be steroids, not steroids, remdesivir, not remdesivir, hydroxychloroquine, no hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, no ivermectin, whatever the case may have been, proning, not proning, all of these things played a role. And this, they say, the authors, might have affected the profile of patients progressing to ECMO support. At the same time, there was expansion in the use and in the number of centers providing ECMO support to patients with COVID-19. Both of these trends could have altered outcomes, and I cannot agree with them anymore. We saw a lot of places who did not do ECMO up to a certain point suddenly calling and wanting, well, can we get a machine? There were hybriding machines, repurposing dialysis machines. Companies were building ECMO machines. And it was, I felt like it was a free-for-all. And thank God that this process didn't last that long, because it would have been, I think it could have gotten even worse than I think that it was. The reported experiences of previous patients with COVID-19 might play a role in clinicians' bedside estimation of the appropriateness of ECMO by individual patients. Therefore, we aim to compare patients with COVID-19 who were treated with ECMO on or before May 1st, 2020, against patients treated after that date by examining baseline patient characteristics, treatments used, characteristics of the centers providing ECMO support, and of course, patient outcomes. We used two complementary comparisons. First, we compared care and outcomes in a fixed group of early adopting centers and analyzed changes between early and more recent patients in the same hospitals. Second, we studied whether the care and outcomes of patients at centers that began using ECMO for COVID-19 later in the pandemic were the same as those of contemporaneous patients at the early adopting centers. Now, I know I've said the same thing several different ways, but it really needs to be reinforced, and you really need to understand what the individual groups are. A group of hospitals over here that are doing ECMO, have been doing ECMO, and you have a date, May of 2020 is the cutoff date. They've been doing ECMO for years before, group A1 up to May of 2020, group A2 after that date. Then you have a group of hospitals over here that have not been doing ECMO, started doing ECMO during the pandemic, so late adopting centers, group B, and that's going to be after May 20, and what are those patient characteristics and how were those outcomes compared to over here? This is very interesting. Research in context is the title of this section, evidence before this study. We did not perform a formal literature review. The impact of ECMO support on COVID-19 survival is uncertain because no randomized clinical trials have compared invasive mechanical ventilation without ECMO versus treatment with ECMO support in COVID-19. So if you remember the SESAR trial, that was what its comparison was, and it favored the use of ECMO. Though some disagree with the quality perhaps of the study, those were the conclusions of those authors. Outcomes of ECMO started for COVID-19 early in the pandemic, this being before May 1st of 2020, were reported in several observational studies. A 2021 systematic review and meta-analysis of ECMO in adults with COVID-19 included 22 studies, almost 1,900 patients, and reported a pooled in-hospital mortality rate of 37.1%, which, if you think about it, you know, for VV ECMO for strictly pulmonary failure, that's been sort of the standard understanding or quote, initial quote of what's going to be the mortality rates. 40% for VV, usually 60% for VA, for cardiogenics, for heart failure. Subsequent studies have reported mortality rates of over 50%. These are isolated studies. It is unclear from these studies whether the mortality of ECMO-supported patients has changed over time, and if so, why such changes might have occurred. And again, this is for COVID-19. Added value of this study of 4,800 plus patients from 349 sites, 41 different countries, showed that over 2020, mortality after ECMO support in patients with COVID-19 increased by about 15%, and the median duration of ECMO support increased by 6 days, groups A1 versus A2. Compared with patients with COVID-19 who received ECMO earlier in the pandemic, patients treated received ECMO after May 1st, 2020, were more commonly treated with corticosteroids. Remember, don't use steroids. No, do use steroids. Are we dealing with something that we need an immune response? Are we dealing with something that is a overactive immune response and we need to modulate that? So I don't think we knew. Factors appearing to affect outcomes included that patients who received ECMO after May 1st had a higher likelihood of treatment refractory disease despite similar conventional risk factors, and that centers with less experience providing ECMO support for COVID-19 were more likely to have a higher mortality rate. I don't think that that's, I mean, that's just, to me, commonsensical. And of course, we had the original strain, but if you remember, right around this time, May 2020, what we're talking about is when Delta hit. And that was brutal. That was absolutely brutal. And we saw an increase personally in our institutions, a big increase in mortality during the Delta surge. It is unknown how ECMO support affects survival in COVID-19. However, mortality after ECMO and the duration of ECMO support are not static over time. This study showed that mortality worsened over the course of the pandemic, an evolution that requires continued surveillance of ECMO outcomes for and in COVID-19. Furthermore, given that ECMO is a finite resource and that 25% of patients with COVID-19 received 5 weeks or more of ECMO support, centers should consider developing local policies that guide the ethical allocation of ECMO when resources are constrained. Now, that's not to say that 25% of all patients with COVID, diagnosed with COVID-19 received 5 weeks or more of ECMO. 25% of patients who got ECMO for COVID-19 received 5 weeks or more of ECMO support, and that's the point. We ran out of resources because it's not just a couple of day run. It's it takes quite some time. 5 weeks is a long time. Here's their methods. I'm only going to focus on the parts I highlighted. Group A1, which included patients with COVID-19 who started on ECMO before May 1st, 2020, at so-called early adopting centers. They're calling them early adopting centers because they already did ECMO. An early adopting center was one that reported using ECMO support for patients with COVID-19 on or before May 1st of 2020. The second group, group A2, included patients who started ECMO support at this early adopting center between May 2nd and December 31st of 2020, the second time period. Third, Group B, which included patients who started ECMO between May 2nd and December 31st in so-called late adopting centers, defined, and they defined it as centers that only provided ECMO for COVID-19 after May 1st of 2020. And I dare say they were not providing ECMO for anything. Mm-hmm. Let's dive into the outcomes. The primary outcome was in-hospital mortality in a time-to-event analysis assessed 90 days after the ECMO was started. Secondary outcomes were the median duration of ECMO support, median duration of hospital stay, the patient's final dispositions, and complications experienced during ECMO. The ELSO registry observes patient outcomes while they are at an ELSO member center. If a patient is discharged from another institution, the ELSO registry records their outcome before discharge, but does not observe the outcome after discharge from the ELSO member center. Now, also keep in mind, there's a lot of hospitals that provide ECMO that are not ELSO centers or within an ELSO ECMO center. And I would say that there's probably only, and I'm not 100% sure of this, but it's less than 40% of centers providing ECMO support that report to the ELSO registry and are ELSO ECMO center members. So keep that in mind. I'm not going to go over the statistical analysis at all. I'm not a statistician, and I don't think it's really difficult reading, but you can go back and read this. This article can be found. It's published. In fact, I should have shown that, and I apologize that I didn't. I'm going to go right here. It's in The Lancet, volume 398, October 2nd of 2021. I highly recommend that you read this article. So let's get to the results. Between January 1st and December 31st, 2020, 5,200 ECMO-supported patients with COVID-19 were reported to the ECMO registry. Now, all of the rest of this basically says that they excluded several patients for several reasons, and they ultimately ended up with 4,812 ECMO-supported patients that are part of this study. We talked about the 349 centers over 41 countries. And this is found in their appendix 12.21. On or before May 1st, 2020, ECMO support for COVID-19 was provided to 1,182 patients at 236 early adopting centers, group A1. Between May 2nd and December 31st of 2020, an additional 2,824 patients received ECMO support at one of the early adopting centers, Group A2, whereas 806 patients received ECMO for COVID-19 at one of 113 late adopting centers between these dates. Group B is found in that appendix. So that's really kind of interesting. You look at in honor before, you have 1,100 patients at 236 locations, but in the late adopting, you had 113 late adopting centers and only and 806 patients. So actually a pretty high patient to center ratio. So it's not like they just did very, very few cases. That's actually quite a few. First, considering only patients managed at early adopting centers were compared, group A1 and group A2, group A1 patients had similar median BMI, sex distribution, and rate of pre-ECMO acute heart failure and cardiac arrest relative to group A2. Diabetes, pre-existing heart disease, immunocompromised status, bacterial pneumonia, and bloodstream co-infections were more common in patients in group A2 than in group A1. Overall, risk factors for mortality had similar estimates on or before May 1st, which is group A1, and after May 1st, group A2. And here we can take a look at the distribution. So basically, the age in group A1 is here in this column. 50 years old, 51 in A2, 49, so pretty consistent. BMI is similar across the three groups, A1, A2, group B. Males to female ratio seems to be very similar. Pre-ECMO comorbidities, as far as just look at the percentages here, really kind of the same. Cancer, immunocompromised, diabetes. I don't see a whole lot different in these patients. So the patient match is actually pretty good all the way across the board. I don't see a whole lot there that is different. So I think we're talking about, in terms of these metrics, the same animal. So further in the results, the majority of early adopting and late adopting centers were located in North America. Not at all surprising. Among patients at early adopting centers, the pre-ECMO treatment differed over 2020. Group A2 patients were more likely to have received non-invasive ventilation before ECMO and had a shorter median duration of invasive ventilation before ECMO than did group A1. So they were, and I'm gonna show you that in table two, much more quickly to transition from ventilator or failure to be able to ventilate to ECMO in that group A2. Additionally, use of corticosteroids or remdesivir was much more common in group A2 than in group A1 because they said that you don't want to blunt the immune response, and two, remdesivir wasn't available. Patients in group A1 and A2 started ECMO at similar pre-ECMO vent settings, PaCO2s, PaO2s, and PF ratios. So we'll look at that here. And I circled a couple of things that I found interesting. So you can kind of go through all of these. It's the same setup as the previous table, group A1, group A2, and then group B. But look at this prone positioning. 60%, 60%, but in group B, only 51%. And that was statistically significant when you compare group A2 versus group B. Pre-ECMO endotracheal intubation days, how many days the patient was intubated. Again, you see here it's 4, 3.1, 2.7, that number trending down. And the value compared to A1 and A2 was statistically significant, and as was, but it was not statistically significant between groups A2 and B. So I'm corrected there. And over here, COVID-19 therapies, you can see here all of them had different over the course of the process. So any 77 versus 92, corticosteroids only 43% in A1, 78% in A2, but you can see 72% in group B because we found them to be useful, right? Remdesivir wasn't available, 9%, 57%, and then 50% for group B. And hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine, 53%. Everybody thought that it was going to be useful, and then it dropped to 6% and only 8% in group B. So I think you see the evolution of this whole process of what are we supposed to do here? How do we treat the underlying disease? Because as we all know, ECMO is only going to treat the symptoms at the moment, which is the failure to be able to oxygenate or ventilate. It isn't going to treat the underlying disease. You still have to manage that. Let's look at the results. When comparing patients in group A2 and B, a higher proportion of patients in group A2 received prone positioning and neuromuscular blockade, but other reported pre-ECMO treatments were similar. Among early adopting centers, the thing about the neuromuscular blockade is we were putting patients on ECMO. We were definitely not paralyzing them. We wanted to put them on ECMO as quickly as we could, trying not even to intubate them, and then actually get them up and start ambulating them and keeping them physically active. So that's kind of how we approached it. And I have to say that I think it made a big difference. Among early adopting centers, the cumulative incidence of in-hospital mortality 90 days after starting ECMO was 36.9%. Again, this is early adopting. In group A1 versus 50, which was in group A1. So early in the process, group A1, which are early adopting centers, mortality was 36.9%, but later in the process, same hospitals, 51.9%, nearly 52% mortality. At initiation, these differences persisted after adjusting for patient level and center level characteristics. Relative to group A2, group A1 patients had a lower adjusted relative risk of in-hospital mortality 90 days after ECMO. Conversely, and this is very important, patients in group B had a higher adjusted relative risk than those in group A2. So you have sicker patients at the newer centers with a higher adjusted risk of mortality and, of course, a higher mortality rate. Advanced age, cancer, cardiac arrest before starting ECMO, and AKI, acute kidney injury, were associated with an increased relative risk of mortality. And that's what we're going to see here in figure two. This is figure one, and this basically shows, so the blue line that you see here, blue, is group A1. Here, the red, is group A2. And the green here is group B. Again, this is blue is early adopting centers before May 20, 2020. Red, same centers, early adopting centers after May 2020. And then green, late adopting centers after May of 2020. And you can just basically look at the graph and see that you had here basically within 10 days. At 90 days, that's really what's going to be important here. You have about 36%. Here you have closer to 50%, and here you have almost 60% mortality. I thought this was a very fascinating graph. The center line is basically North America, and you're comparing with this early and late. That's a different graph. Please forgive me. I'm sorry. Relative risk of mortality at early adopting centers on or before May 1st and after May 1st and late adopting centers after May 1st. Okay, this is just their demographics. So group A1 patients started in ECMO, and that's just giving you the overview of what these patients looked like. There's another graph that I wanted to get to, see if it's in here. No, I think this is it. You're going to have to forgive me. I'm going to have to just re-review this because it's kind of really pretty interesting. Yes, so this is versus North America. Here it is right here. So the center line here is North America. ELSO chapter versus North America. If you were in Europe, you had a lower risk of mortality than North America. South and West Asian, higher. Latin America, pretty close to the center line, pretty similar to us, but Asia Pacific, way over here, a very low risk of mortality. I found that very interesting. Some other things that I thought was interesting is the PaCO2s were much higher in different areas compared to what the median was. The final disposition of ECMO-supported patients was different, table three, figures three, and in that appendix. Patients in group A1 were more likely to be discharged home or to an acute rehab center and were more likely to be transferred to another hospital than were patients in group A2. So here we see here, group A1, group A2, and group B, discharged to home, 32%. Versus 22% versus 24%. To long-term acute facilities, 11%, 12%, 9% to another hospital. You can see the numbers there. Remain in the hospital, discharged from the ICU, less than 1% all the way across the board. Remained in the ICU, a little bit higher in groups A2 and group B, but I think that goes to the severity of the disease. In-hospital death, 38% versus 53 versus 59. And looking at hemolysis, pump failure, those were all kind of the same. Oxygen failure, that's oxygenator failure, it should say, and required need for circuit change, 14%, 17% versus 9%. And then here we see this graph. You can figure that out on your own. The dark blue is died. The red is hospitalized. The green is an unknown status, discharged to another hospital, discharged to LTAC, and it's a pretty graph representing what's happened to patients with group A1, group 2, and group A2 and B. Among early adopting centers, the median duration of ECMO support was 14.1 days in group A1 and 20 days in group A2, so patients were on ECMO a little bit longer. A higher volume of center experience providing ECMO support to patients with COVID-19 was associated with lower in-hospital mortality. So groups A1 and groups A2, because they were early adopting centers, they already had experience. Early adopting centers caring for at least 9 patients with COVID-19 on or before May 1st, 2020 had a risk-adjusted mortality rate of 56% relative to centers without such experience. First, patient selection might have changed between stages of the pandemic. Very important concepts here, and that's very true. It is possible that early in the pandemic, clinicians only started ECMO in patients with high likelihood of survival, since there was initial concern that critical care resources might be overwhelmed in many areas. I'm going to tell you my experience. That is not the case in our experience. However, this hypothesis might not explain the results, because in their model, which was based on established risk factors for COVID-19 and ECMO, suggest patients in group 1 had a higher rather than lower risk of mortality, predicted risk before. These data suggest that patient selection on the basis of established risk factors was probably not an important contributor to the differential mortality observed. Nonetheless, we cannot exclude the possibility that unmeasured patient risk factors contributed to the differences in mortality. Not to mention, I don't think we really know yet what this disease does to certain subsets of people. It just reacts so differently to different people, and I don't think we know why. Secondly, there were pre-ECMO changes in patients' COVID-19 treatment over time, right? We talked about that. At early adopting centers, patients who were treated after May 1st, group A2, were more frequently received non-invasive forms of ventilation before endotracheal intubation, potentially selecting for a cohort with greater patient self-inflicted lung injury to group A1. Patients in group A1 and A2 received similar rates of prone positioning and use of neuromuscular blockade before ECMO. However, patients in group A2 more commonly received dexamethasone or steroids and remdesivir, which is consistent with evolving recommendations for COVID-19 treatment. Together, these differences in treatment suggest that a higher proportion of patients supported with ECMO after May 1st had treatment refractory disease than did those treated earlier. Again, different iteration of different variant of the coronavirus than did those treated earlier, and thus might represent a different clinical phenotype with a worse overall prognosis after ECMO, despite few clear differences established in patient risk factors. The disease was more virulent, or the virus is more virulent. Third, patients' final disposition changed over time. Early adopting centers caring for patients on or before May 1st transferred 18% of patients to other hospitals. However, after May 1st, the same centers only transferred 11 patients because the receiving hospitals didn't have any room anymore either. Some transferred patients might have later died without the ELSO registry recording the death. However, this possibility does not fully explain their results. Under the extreme assumption that all transferred patients died after transfer, the difference in mortality would remain significantly worse. And I'm going to come here. In summary, mortality, this is very important. In summary, mortality for ECMO-supported patients with COVID-19 significantly worsened worldwide over the course of the pandemic, and duration of ECMO support increased. These dynamic outcomes compel continued surveillance, facilitating awareness of local and regional mortality rates, duration of ECMO support, and resource constraints. Our findings have important implications both in setting expectations with patients and surrogate decision makers, their families, and for informing clinicians and policymakers with respect to the most appropriate ECMO initiation criteria. Furthermore, centers should consider developing local policies that guide the ethical allocation of ECMO when resources are constrained. So, given the resource taxing nature of ECMO as a whole, just in general, I think this entire world, many countries, not just the United States, but my local area, did remarkable things with very little, and were able to get through this process. But I do want to show you this last and final graph, which I think is telling, because generally speaking, we talk about the number of ECMO centers. And remember, only about 40%. I'm not 100% sure of that number, but I'm pretty sure 40% of centers providing ECMO are in the ECMO, the ELSO registry. But within the ELSO registry, I'm going to show you the number of centers, and I want to show you the number of ECMO runs. Usually we only go up to 2017, and we show this big increase from about 2010 after the H1N1, and you see it increase. I'm going to show you up to 2021, and I think this is very, very, very important. This is usually what we're looking at. This is the H1N1 period, ECMO increasing. Now look at this, continues from 2016, 2017, 18, 19, 20, and 21. You see this big increase in the number of hospitals providing ECMO support, and it's much higher than this. And you look at the number of reported ECMO runs, and you see that continuing to climb all the way through 2021. So I have no doubt by the time we get out to 2023 numbers, we're really out here, and we get out to 2025, we're going to be somewhere over here. ECMO is here to stay. ECMO is going to continue to evolve and improve, and I think you're going to see better and better outcomes. But ultimately, keep in mind, ECMO is only there to buy you time. And ECMO carries with it its own risks. If you took a perfectly healthy person and put them on ECMO, you would make them very, very, very sick, and you would give them an increased risk of early mortality. So it is not without its own risk factors. But in the appropriate setting, it buys you time. We need to figure out and learn how do we actually treat this disease, COVID-19, its various different variants, and be prepared for another pandemic moving forward. I think I did good on time. I want to thank everyone. I want to apologize for all of the delays. As I said, we have been very, very busy. I have been very busy clinically, forcing me to have to cancel a couple of these programs. I appreciate your patience and understanding with that. HET.us, if you'd like to join our group. No question in my mind, it is the, I am so privileged to work with the best people I've ever worked with in my 44-year career, but we do need some help. And we need to get a couple of more folks into our very elite team that want to join us here. So HET.us, if you want to reach out to me about a job, if you want to reach out to us about this program, contact at perfusioneducation.com. Either way, I'll get those emails, and we will talk to you all soon. Any questions from the YouTubers? No questions from the YouTubers? Anybody call in? Did our phone ring? Our phone never rings. I'll tell you what, one day I'm going to give somebody the best present ever if they'll just call in, all right? Thank you all very much. I'll see you next month for our next Perf Web program. And this time, it'll go off seamlessly. Thanks again for all your patient understanding. We'll talk to you later. Bye.